Welcome film industry professionals, film buffs, and aspiring filmmakers. This is the Cinema Pathway Podcast presented by Paradoxical Films, and I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. Guys, join us on a journey behind the camera, and most importantly, beyond what we know about cinema and the craft of filmmaking. So, sit down, grab your popcorn, drink your soda, and let's ride the cinema road together with Cinema Pathway. Welcome to all listeners across the world to your new film family, Cinema Pathway Podcast, with your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. This podcast is for film buffs, film lovers, film critics, people who make films, people who watch films, and people who just like to talk F-I-L-M film. You have found your new family. All right, guys, let's get to it. Perspective is defined as a particular attitude toward, a way of regarding something, or a point of view. This man, Mr. Terrell's positive and humble point of view has opened many doors into the hearts of not only millions of people around the world, but has served as a beacon of light, inspiration, and a role model for his family, his friends, and the very people he mentors in his neighborhood. Those doors of destiny for Terrell have opened into a blossoming career as, check this out, guys, a content marketing specialist, did not know what that was until today, filmmaker, storyteller, director, producer, music composer, and editor. And as his nickname states in the industry, Deeds, right?
Yeah.
That's your nickname, yeah. Deeds. We hope that he does another good deed today by gifting us with his unique perspective and knowledge over an ever-changing and, I know you agree with me, very challenging film industry here today. Film family, we unveil to you Mr. Terrell. I'm going to call you Good Deeds. Fossil. Or Fossil, right?
Yeah.
Fossil.
Yeah.
Mr. Terrell Good Deeds Fossil. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Man, that was good, man. Can I take that with me? I need to say that often about myself.
Do I get 10% off the top, maybe? I can write this for other people.
I told you, like, 20.
Yeah?
20.
See, I'm learning how to be a content marketing specialist. I'm already marketing myself to you. Do you see that?
You're doing
you should have
good.
Taught me. You should have taught me good. How to market myself.
This is why
that
I do
your
it.
Problem. That was your first problem. You can't tell an actor how to make money because he's going to start making money.
That's what I want you to do.
All right. So this first section is called The Fresh Prince of Broward County.
Wow.
Just like the iconic show, The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You know that, right? Will Smith, 1990s, right? You were sent by your mom to escape one of the roughest communities in Miami, where shootings, drug dealing, and prison sentences were common ground. And you were sent to live with your upper class, middle class family in Broward County. How has this change of view transformed your life, influenced your perspective on life, and then fueled your work in the film world?
When I was a kid, I didn't realize how much of an impact that would be. My mom did the best she could, you know, and when she sent me to my godparents, those were, at that time, it felt like hell for me as a kid, just because I was separated from my mom. And my godparents, they were as close to Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv as you can get, you know, very nice two-story home. They owned other properties. Their kids were in college. It was beautiful. And I had never experienced that type of lifestyle in Pembroke Pines. You're in a neighborhood where the neighbors know each other. They're shaking hands. Hey, how you doing, Billy? You know, like, that was new for me. You know what I mean? I had never experienced that. And the greatest gift they gave me was teaching me that I was actually intelligent and that I was actually smart. Not that my mom didn't tell me that, but it was like, in that environment, being smart wasn't cool. You know, doing your schoolwork wasn't cool. Getting in trouble was cool. Knowing that you knew, knowing how to fight was cool. So being in, having that switch of environment to where it was like, hey, you can be an honor roll student. And me actually seeing that I had straight A's on a report card, I was like, that was the first light bulb. That's like, you're actually way smarter than your surroundings. And that's what I say the greatest gift for me was. And I'll thank them forever for that.
Have you used any of the experiences in any of the films you have now? Like, I love the one you had, the Lust of the Flesh.
Oh, Lust of the Flesh.
Yeah. You know what it kind of reminds me of? You know how you have the redemptive story of when you're tempted by something and you just want to go back to what you knew. Right. It's almost like when you were with your parents in Broward County, a part of you wanted to go back to that old life, but you kept trying to, it was like there was a transformation needed to be. Right. Yeah. Have you used any of that inspiration in the moves you've done now?
I would say yes and no. I haven't made my best films yet. Like, I haven't made the stuff that I actually want to make. I started making stuff that I was like, all right, this is cool. This is cool. But the goal is to get better at it so that I can make the stuff I really have in my head. You know what I mean? And so I haven't told all of the stories I wanted to tell. So I would say yes and no. With Lust of the Flesh, what was good about that is that was like, that was just a, me exposing a real internal fight that I have. Like, most people look at fornication or sex between two people and one dimensional. It's like, you know, you're an adult, that person is an adult, and if you guys want to do something, do it. Yeah. And it's like, but there are occasions where, like, you kind of want to not do it. You know what I mean? But you have an urge. Yeah. And it's like, how do you fight against the urge to do something that you don't want to do? Just like similar to smoking a cigarette. There's people who are addicted to drugs or addicted to cigarettes, and they might want to stop, but for some reason they have an urge to keep doing it. And it takes a lot to stop. So I think with Lust of the Flesh, it was showing, it was exposing like a battle of men who actually don't take pride in having sex with different people. And they do want to stop, but it's a battle. And, you know, I just made that because a lot of people don't respect that kind of battle or fight. They, you know, it's easy to say like, oh, you have self-control. You should be able to control yourself. But I think self-control is a skill set in itself. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, there's different places where people lack self-control. It might not be with sexual encounters. It might be with food. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, I know. I've been to a buffet too, so I understand. By the way, talking about control, I noticed that in all of your movies, you have a certain point of view. You love the over-the-shoulder shot, by the way. I don't know if you realize that. I've noticed that. You love this close-up with the face. And I mean, we all love it because we see the beauty of the person. Right. But I think it's really to get the message of what's in their heart. How has using over-the-shoulder shots controlled your narrative throughout the scape of your movies?
I would say, like, I'll be honest, I'm not purposely always using over-the-shoulder shots. What it is I am still finding my style of telling my story. So I remember yesterday I happened to get the inkling to watch a Spike Lee movie, Clockers. And I noticed that people felt like Spike Lee had his own personal way of filming. And I would say, I don't know everything about Spike Lee's life, but I would say that came from his sense of storytelling and plus his education in film. So I have no formal education in film. And so I'm actually experimenting as I'm filming things, like finding different ways to show different emotions, different angles. So I wouldn't say I'm doing it purposely. I'm more so experimenting with saying, like, I actually like this angle. I actually don't like it.
You know, I love that because, don't get me wrong, I love education. And of course, everyone should go to film school and learn as much as they possibly can. Correct?
Yeah.
Correct? Go to school, kids. Go to school. All right. Be unique. So when people see your work, they say, wow, I've never seen that before. This is a new way of telling a story. You could become the next phenomenon. But if you don't take that risk, when is it ever going to happen?
It's funny you say that because most people, when they are learning film, they go to the originators. Like, when film first started, they go to those guys and they're like, okay, we like the way, you know, this is the name of this type of shot because this guy is the first person to ever do this type of shot.
Yeah.
And then if you were to talk to him, it's like, yeah, you know what I mean? We just did it. We didn't really have a name for this type of shot. We just thought that was a good shot to get that. And I think people are losing the experimentation within film. You know what I mean? Like, how do you know there's not a certain shot or angle out there that hasn't been done yet? And I'm not saying all the angles have or hasn't been done, but there might be a different feeling that you can invoke with a different type of angle. Yes. And so I think it's good to learn all of the rules, but learn all the rules so you can break it as you see fit. And I think that's what makes filmmaking fresh, you know?
I love the word experimentation you just mentioned. Yeah. Because you have an online series called Content Heroes, right?
Content Heroes is a business concept. So the goal was for Content Heroes to be a way for me to help businesses from making terrible content. So it was like superheroes that are actively saving businesses from like making bad content and bad marketing decisions. Uh-huh. And I created that brand because like when I started these productions, I didn't know anything about branding and I was shooting a little bit of everything. So I shot music videos, I would shoot parties, I would shoot weddings. And what would happen is as I started learning more about marketing, I started realizing that somebody who wants a commercial might not choose you because they don't see enough commercials on your page. Okay. They see like parties and it's like, okay, well, I don't know if you can shoot a commercial. And you that actually hinders you from asking for a bigger budget sometimes because you don't seem like you're an expert in one thing. It seems like you just do a whole bunch of different things.
So basically, you don't have the stock to back up what you're asking for.
Right. It's not more so the stock. You just don't have enough of one type of thing that you're promoting. So like if you were getting married to your wife and you come to one videographer's page and he has a bunch of different type of things he shot, and then you go to another videographer page and all he has is weddings, you would probably want to book that guy who all he shoots is weddings over the guy who shoots a bunch of different things, depending on how you see his page.
Because he has vast experience in that one area.
Right.
Oh, so you're saying that most filmmakers should focus on one type of content first and build a platform of that and then let that be able to anchor them into other.
I'll stay away from should, right? I don't want to force people to think one way, but I'll say that
they should consider.
It works.
Consider.
It works. Like a neurosurgeon makes more than a regular doctor because he's specializing in just brains versus a doctor. So when most filmmakers get in, they shoot a lot of different things because they're trying to find like what they like and they're trying to one and then two trying to just make some money. So it's like if you got a party and you got $300, all right, cool, let's do it. You got a music video, cool, let's do it. They're just trying to make some money. But the people who grow in success, they pick one niche and they grow in that niche and they create content to speak directly to the people in that niche. So if I was a wedding videographer, what I would be doing is making, of course, showing my work of all the weddings I've done, but also making content speaking to brides. So, you know, what kind of problems do brides have that I can solve through my content? You know what I mean?
By the way, I love that you mentioned success because in your Content Heroes, you boldly state that you love failures because failure is meant to push you closer to your goals and not further away. What experience have you faced that you consider was probably your biggest failure that you turned into a success that helped you launch the Deeds production company you have now?
I mean, the whole first 4 years of my film production career was, in my opinion, would be considered a failure.
Oh, don't say that.
No, I'm not saying that as in I'm putting down. Like let me explain how I look at failure. So I look at failure as a necessary ingredient, right? For success. Like when you watch the Powerpuff Girls, in the beginning, it's like sugar, spice, and everything nice. These are the ingredients to make the perfect little girls. Well, when it comes to like trying to find success, you need failure to push you that way. And so like me, I have a lot of Christian values. So there's a scripture in the Bible that says God makes all things work for the good of those who love him. Right. So if that is true, then it essentially means that no matter what happens to you, this is not meant to break you or stop you or harm you or break you down. This is meant to help you reach your goal. And so that's how I look at failure. So if I fail at something like the first 4 years, I was terrible at filming. I didn't really know anything. I didn't know anything about angles. It was bad. But what I did learn is that people will like what you create because of you. You know, so people gravitated towards my films not because it was the greatest films ever made or written. It was one, it was a decent story. And then two, it was like, I like the guy who makes this because I'm watching him on this journey of coming from this terrible neighborhood to growing into this person who's finding success in life. And that helps me.
You can hold that thought because we have to talk about money and how to make money in this business. And I know that you're an expert with that, right?
Yeah.
And that's where being a content marketing specialist came out of, right?
Right.
Please, guys, stay tuned as we talk more to Mr. Terrell Good Deeds Fussell about this beautiful marketing tool to make more money. Do you want to make market your movies to other movies so you can make more movies and then make a production company and then be a big success like Mr. Terrell Deeds Fossil? Stay tuned. I see you in a minute. Welcome to Tell Your Story. It is a masterclass hands-on workshop that is presented by Cine Video Tech and brought to you by Paradoxical Films. You will learn how to work with actual film, 16mm, super 16mm, 35mm and film cameras. In addition, how to load them and change magazines. Furthermore, the workshop will prepare you on how and what it takes to work on set as a first or second assistant camera, the fundamentals of lighting, and the pathway to become a director of photography. For information about the classes and updates, everything will be posted on our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/tell-your-story. Welcome back, film family. We are with Mr. Terrell Good Deeds Fussell. Now, can you do a good deed for us? You promise to do a good deed? I'm going to ask you about a very prominent film producer called Mr. Tyler Perry. You know him?
Yeah.
He's done a few things, you know, a few Oscars. Yeah, it's, you know, no big deal, right?
Yeah. Love him.
In a segment we're calling Deeds and Perry. Now, of course, Mr. Tyler Perry is a very successful film producer with his highly regarded film company giving audiences something Hollywood has largely ignored: stories and characters aimed at the life and experiences of the Black community. And like any successful figure, Mr. Perry is not without controversy. All right. These are some things that I want to know what your opinions are on it. All right. Number one, he said, according to NikkiSwift.com, he fired writers for trying to get their union benefits with the members of the Writers Guild of America, stating, "We were not good enough to create over 100 episodes. But now when it comes to reaping the benefits of the show, being syndicated and having other spinoffs from it, he decided to let us go unless we accept a horrible offer." All right. What is your view on union benefits, and should they have been grateful to have the opportunity to work with and get a lower offer? Or do you believe that union benefits should fight for their rights in the union? Kind of like the chicken before the egg, right? Is the content and the relationship more important than the financial pay, or is it harmonious as they come together? And how would your production company be different?
I think it's a tough spot to be in. On one aspect, you do want to get what you're worth. And I believe that everyone should fight for what they're worth. But I think it is a delicate balance of knowing when relationship is more important than money. And that's just a hard, you know, balance to always have, because maybe you don't get your worth from Tyler Perry, but maybe that puts you in the door to work with someone else eventually who does give you your worth, and you learn from the situation of working with Tyler Perry. Now, I don't know all the nuances in
that. Yeah, of course. And we love them. Tyler Perry. We
right.
love him.
I don't know all the nuances in that situation, so I can't speak, like, you know, intelligently on it. But I will say that I would be okay with it because I understand that relationship is important for me to get where I gotta go. Now, if this is like my overall idea of the furthest that I see myself going in life, yes, being a writer for what he's doing, then yeah, I can fight for my worth for it. But yeah, I see, regardless of how this situation pan out, I have my goals and personal thoughts and where I want to go and how I'm going to get there. And this is just a stepping stone to getting there. You know, I'm not relying on what Tyler Perry's giving me, if that makes sense. Yes. So I hope that that answers the question. What makes me different within that is everyone who helped me with my movie, my last movie that I just finished, I gave them a percentage of the movie.
So that's how you combat paying. It's like, hey, you know what? You're part of this entity. If you buy into the entity, not only do you secure whatever winnings we make, but we also get to stay on as the creative.
I did that because like with my last movie before this one, I wanted to know how to make money off of movie.
Yeah.
Right?
You mean Brenda, right?
Hmm?
Was it Brenda?
Yeah, with Brenda. Yeah. Uh-huh. And then after Brenda, I said, okay, I did everything alone in Brenda. I was the sole brain, filmer, editor, producer, like everything, right?
Writer too, right?
Yeah, and I wrote it too. I write all my films. And with this movie, I was like, okay, what's the incentive that I can give everybody to make them want to work with me and help me make this project come to life? If you're a film crew, yeah, I can't pay you up front, but what I can do is make you a business partner with me in this project so that you care about the success of the project alongside with me. And I think the ones that did stay to be a part of it, they stayed because of that, but they also stayed because they enjoyed creating this vision with me. They seen the vision. And I think that's what's important. Get people around you that see the vision in what you're trying to do and the direction you're trying to go, because some of them could have felt the same way. Like, I know I'm worth actually getting paid, but I see the vision of where this guy is trying to go, and I don't know where it's going to go per se, but this can be my stepping stone to get me to where I want to go in life.
Yes.
So let me rock out with him, you know? And so that's how I see things. Sometimes the relationship is better than the upfront money. And sometimes the upfront money is better than the relationship.
Wow. Ultimately, everybody has this crossroads moment. Right? Am I going to honor this relationship over what financial gain I might make? Or is the financial gain going to be the driving force of me doing this project? Now, I believe this as an actor and singer and people who are part of the film world. I do everything from the heart. I really believe that it's an honor to be in front of any movie screen, to be in part of any project, right? That can parlay whatever talent is inside of me, because I believe that it's bigger than myself. Like being part of a story that can not only influence generations of people, but influence generations to come, right? To me, that's the payment. Ultimately, if I have to take a pay cut for the greater good, I think it's a beautiful thing. Now, see, there's another thing he also confronted. They banned two union actors from working with him. So basically, Perry said that he doesn't want to be bound to any agreements that might eat into the profits of his show. Have you ever confronted something like that?
No. I was looking at it like this. A very interesting concept that I heard from Alex Hormozi was, I would rather have 12% of a $100 million pie than 100% of a $0 pie. And so my concept for this was, I'm going to give as much percentage of this movie away so that this movie can become a success. So for me, the goal is, if we can make this movie make $100,000 or more, then I am cool with taking 30 to 50 or 40% of that and giving the other percentage to everyone else so that this movie can be a success. Because one, I have never made $100,000 in one setting. So for me to split $100,000 or more with a bunch of people, it doesn't hurt me, you know, because one, this is not the only time I'll touch this pie. You get what I mean? I just need to touch the pie so I could dream bigger. That's how I'm looking at it. So, okay, look, guys, we created this huge pie. We split it up. Yeah, maybe everybody didn't touch 100,000 together, but now let's go get a bigger pie. You know what I mean? And I'm cool with giving away even more percentage of a bigger pie so that I can create the life that I want for myself.
Parlay that success into a bigger success, ultimately, which grows your pie. Now, the third thing that he was criticized for, and I hate to bring this up, but I really feel like our own communities tend to attack each other the most. He said that his movies fed into a lot of stereotypes and that people didn't like seeing themselves. Do you feel like your movies have played into any stereotypes?
With stereotypes with my films, I come from an urban background. So a lot of times I do show a lot of urban things. I actually don't believe stereotypes are like lies, right? I think this is going to be touchy, but I think
touch it.
If you see a guy with dreads and a hoodie with golds, sometimes it is smart to think, hey, this guy could be coming to rob, right? And sometimes it's not. Because I am a guy with goals and I had dreads and I wasn't coming to rob anybody. So, but that don't mean the stereotype is not true, right? And so I hate to say that, but I'm just saying, in all honesty, all stereotypes are not necessarily bad. I think every culture has stereotypes about them, has certain things that they do that's a part of their culture. Now, I think with African Americans, we probably are upset because a lot of our stereotypes are viewed as negative stereotypes. Yes. But in all actuality, those things are not who we are. Like, you know, some of the things you see in our communities are not exactly who we are. But like I said, when you have a bunch of people who aren't exposed to a lot of things, they're going to do what they only know. I was lucky because I moved with my godparents and I got to see a better lifestyle than most people. So I was able to open my mind in a lot of places that a lot of these people in these neighborhoods have not been. So is it stereotypical if they act in a certain kind of way that people deem like a lot of people from this culture act? I mean, I think it's a balance to it, you know?
I believe so, too. And I also believe that, one, you can only write what you know on the screen. We've already touched that. But two, how do you capitalize that monetarily on the screen as well? Because I know, being a content marketing specialist, the only way that you can capitalize on something is if you know what you're talking about, meaning that you can't capitalize on a genre that you know nothing about.
Exactly.
So you know how to market, right, to the people that you surround yourself with from your experiences. How has that influenced your work as a content marketing specialist? How do you get to make money, or at least market them, on either online social media or within like theaters? Because I know you sold out of theater. I mean, for a new filmmaker, that's amazing. I mean, I'd be lucky if someone comes to my, 10 people come to my show. You know, ultimately, how do you do that as a content marketing specialist? What are your strategies?
The first thing is you have to understand who your target audience is. Like, every film has a target audience. Anytime you think that, and this goes for businesses, like this is not like locked down to filmmaking. If you are making a project, this project speaks primarily to a certain culture, right? If you're making a project about a vegan chef, then guess off back, chefs, vegans are a big part of your target audience that you can speak to. And you can actually put a lot of stereotypes and nuances in that film that they can relate to, that will allow you to monetize to that audience. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is knowing who your target audience is. You have to know who your target audience is. And then you have to know, like, where are your target audience? So
you mean geographically, like in the world?
That too. Yeah. But literally, like, where are they online? You know what I mean? Like, what kind of pages do they watch? What kind of books do they read? Magazines? What kind of online stores do they shop at?
How do you get that information? What do you do?
You have to, like, really sit down and look it up. One thing that can help you is, like, Reddit. It's another one called Kura. You got Axe.com. These are places that people ask certain questions looking for answers. And so if you have the solution to that question, you know, you can actually reach out to your target audience. So, for example, if let's just say if I was a wedding videographer, right? I'm going to take it back to that example earlier.
Of course.
If I was a wedding videographer, there are questions that brides are asking on these sites. How do I find this type of videographer? How do I, you know, they're asking questions that a wedding videographer can only answer. You get what I mean? And so if you want to monetize to a certain audience with your movie, you can create content that speaks directly to them.
How do you optimize yourself as a content marketing specialist to a niche market?
One, like I said, you just figure out who is it that you want to cater to. And once you figure out who do you want to cater to, you spend your time learning everything that you can about that audience that you want to cater to. So it and this works for anything. If you have a business, if you have a film, if you want to do content for clients, you just have to learn about the people that you want to cater to. And so you can sit down and write down how many niches are out there that you have expertise on. I wouldn't say just pick any niche. I would say pick a niche that you can see yourself working in and that you can actually sit down and gain the expertise on. So if I wanted to shoot a movie about a doctor, right, I would actually go sit down with a doctor. And I got a bunch of questions for this doctor. How do doctors act? You know, what do they do after work?
Okay. And with that, keep that tool idea, because the next segment is going to talk about all your movies and all the tools you use to make them a success. So keep that in your little noggin, okay?
And for my noggin's pretty big.
Yeah, I know. My noggin's pretty big. See, that's the reason why I wear fedora, because it kind of hides the forehead. But see, that's another movie trick, right? In real life, my head is like this big, but on camera, it's like this. Anyway, please, guys, stay tuned to our next segment. I'll see you in a minute. We would like to take a moment to thank our partners who help make this podcast possible. Cine Video Tech has been providing film equipment, training, and services to the film industry both inside and outside the U.S. since 1968, which provides directing, writing, and assistant director services. And ComTV offers consulting and production services for a wide range of entertainment, marketing, advertising, and commercial projects. Welcome back, film family, with Mr. Terrell Good Deeds Fossil, or Fossil. Is it Fossil? Fossil?
It's okay. I've heard all variations of my name before.
Now, look, behind the scenes, we just had this juicy conversation. I was like, this needs to be recorded. How do you feel about independent movie makers putting their stuff on Tubi and Amazon Prime, which I would love, but you think different?
I mean, I think it's a route, right? Everything. I try not to talk in absolutes because someone else's path to success will be different from someone else's. So I never try to, like, what I try to do is provide perspective. And when it comes to independent filmmakers, usually we'll put our projects on these platforms because we think that's the only option we have to actually make some kind of money or success from our projects that we create. So it's like you spent the last 6 months making a movie. You might feel like putting it on Tubi is your only option because Tubi is like the hottest platform right now.
That makes immediate money.
But the real truth is, like, how people are building successful brands is by building an audience and then promoting their products and services.
Yeah, but how
to
do you build
audience?
An audience? Because I'll be honest with you, if I was an independent filmmaker and I was on Tubi, Amazon, I'd be like, wow, I made it. What other options do people have?
Well, you have to, outside of just that movie, create more content.
Okay.
And right? And so the content will vary depending on who you are, who your brand is. And maybe not everybody wants to get in front of a camera and actually speak to a camera. Most directors are content with being behind the camera. But I think if you can find a way to create content that speaks to an audience, that influences an audience, then that is the people that you're going to make money from primarily. So if what are your ideals as a filmmaker, right? Who are you?
True.
What shaped your perspective? What shaped the way you think? Share that with the world now cinematically.
But what other platforms can you put your movies on?
Create your own.
Like what?
What I mean is, like, create your own platform. Like, basically,
like your own LLC kind of thing?
Yeah, like create your own app. Create your own website.
So instead of going to these mega conglomerates that are basically paying your percentage, you just do it yourself.
Yeah, you do your own.
So create your own app or your own platform, own website that can sell. Right. And you basically get, you know,
drive traffic to that.
Oh, you get now, people's PayPal, whatever they can pay with, drive traffic to that. So then you get 100% of the profits. Right. And now you just made your own movie house.
Exactly. Like, and the only reason I suggest that is because otherwise people are going to be dictating to you how much you make. Right. Versus if you create your own audience. Yeah. You know, you can dictate to your audience your value. And being that you got to think about it. These brands, like, think about Jordans.
People, you mean the shoes?
Yeah,
the shoes.
Uh-huh. People love Jordans. It's almost to the point where if you're wearing a shoe that's not a Jordan or some kind of name brand, people are like frowning down on your shoe. You know, wear some unknown shoe around some young guy. And he's like, what are those? They can look better than
like
Jordans.
You mean like during the date, right?
Right. They can look better than Jordans. But the fact that it's not some sort of name brand, people are looking down on your shoe. So think about how much affinity people have to a Jordan or a Nike or some other kind of shoe brand or clothing brand. You can build that through your films, through getting people to have that kind of affinity for your film production company.
And that's what you talked about earlier about uniqueness and niches.
Yeah.
Because if you don't have original content and people have seen it all before, they just go on to the next one. Okay, you have this beautiful idea that I don't know if you want to say it on the mic, but I think you have to expound on it. I've never heard of this before, and I think it is a beautiful niche market that's never been tapped into. You want to make documentary funeral films. I like that.
How I came up with the idea was there's this graveyard on 46th Street and like 32nd Avenue,
yeah,
in Miami, Florida. And you can't put any more graves there. Like, there's graves on top of graves, you know. And
so like the lot's full?
Yeah, it's pretty much full.
Ooh, that's scary.
Like, so there's caskets at the bottom, and then there's a casket in the middle, and then there's a casket on top of the ground.
Ooh, that's, yeah, spooky.
And so what's dope, what was crazy is I was walking one day and I was looking at the dates on the casket, and I was seeing that some of the dates were like in the 1800s. And I thought about myself and my family. I don't know nobody in my family past 1960. Wow. I don't know anybody in my, yeah, family past the 1800s.
Yeah.
So I thought about, like, imagine living a whole life and nobody remembers you anymore. Like,
so the idea basically is that this would be a celebration of life and a memorial to the family that can last longer than a little headshot on a tombstone that says good father or blah, blah, blah.
It's something they could pass down forever and ever and ever. Like, how dope would it be if you could see videos of your great grandparents or your great, 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 great grandparents?
But maybe like in a cinematic film, right, style.
How they lived, what they thought about, what they believed.
Can I write this down? Can I get 10% now? What's that show where you market your stuff? What's that big show you call? Shark Tank.
Yeah, Shark Tank.
Ding, ding. Well, remember, Terrell thought of it first. So for anybody trying to get it, okay?
I'm pretty sure it's other guys who've done it. They probably just haven't framed it like I'm doing.
Well, you'll be the first, yeah, Mr. Terrell. Marketing, okay? Don't devalue. Like you said, right?
No, you're right.
He's the first.
Right.
And I'm claiming that on this podcast.
I'm the first, guys.
And I probably will go into business with him. Now, like your last movie, Brenda, right? This is whole phenomenon about staying woke. All right. I know this is a controversial subject, but I have to talk about it because, all right, I really feel like, you know, the 2019 blackout Oscars, remember? Or there's a blackout.
Educate me.
So basically, I don't know if it was 2019, but it was basically that they were saying that there were no African-American actors nominated. And this is not fair because you're not inclusion. And this is when the whole inclusion came in.
Okay,
and then
gotcha.
I'd never even heard of the word woke until like a few years ago.
Okay.
About basically bringing the intimate issues of today's life to the forefront, right? And staying on top of that. I know your film Brenda talks a lot about being woke and basically about being aware of social issues like racial, social justice. Can you speak to the audience about what you think about woke films and that woke ideology? Is it founded in reality, or is it something that people tend to make like a figment of their personal lives?
I
know it's a deep question, but
No, that's fine. I think in essence, with African Americans, what happens is they want to feel included, and they want to feel included.
Or in any race.
Right.
Like, we're just talking about African Americans now.
Right.
Yeah.
I can only speak from like my perspective as an African American, and just because I had this conversation so many different times.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we want to be included in everything that's being built in America.
Yeah.
Because we feel like we had part in
including
in
films.
America being built. And so, like, how my perspective though on being upset about the Oscars is build your own Oscars. Like, why do you keep asking for stuff when you have the same power to build the things that you want for yourself? Versus you keep asking to be included into someone else's thing when you can build your own thing. All you have to do is figure out how to be just as great as they are at marketing their thing. They're great at marketing the Oscars as the thing you have to have an award for. You know what I mean? But the value that an Oscar has comes from us believing that it's valuable.
Do you realize that this is by seeing like thousands of quotes on all your movies and your film series, like Choices, right, which you guys got to go see Choices. I mean, this is a beautiful film series about the consequences of your actions. Let's just say that some of them are sexual, some of them gambling. So, you know, it's a very moral based film, which I love.
Right.
I love.
Right. Thank you.
I think it's something that people, but a lot of your movies, whether you realize it or not, have been deemed woke movies, meaning that you're bringing light to social and racial justice issues to the forefront, but you're telling it in very unique ways where people don't realize they're being fed woke ideologies, but you are. Did you know that? Did you know
I would say, because I try not to use the lingo, but
yeah,
I would say I'm a pretty
thousands of people online
I'm a pretty
have, but go ahead.
Woke individual.
Okay.
I think the main things that I want people to get from my films is that you can change. You can be different, because primarily my audience is the urban community. And my goal is to take the urban community through every genre of movie that there is, whether that's sci-fi, horror, drama, whatever, right? Uh-huh. But the goal is for them to see different perspectives that plant a seed.
That's what ultimately you want, but let's be honest. Can I take you?
Go ahead.
I don't want to get too deep.
Go ahead, get deep. I brought a shovel.
Thank you. Like Tyler Perry, like Spike Lee, like Lee Daniels, right? I feel like ultimately the criticism, just like in your own films, is that once again, you're catering to stereotypes and woke ideologies versus telling the story if race and social justice issues weren't a fact. I don't think your films have. I don't think their films have. But I've noticed that this happens to be this trend where people want to make movies with that kind of message versus the original creation would have been without all the agendas and ideologies and theologies of the message. And, you know, now we have to fight for our rights. What do you feel about the authenticity of the original creation of the work being bombarded by basically like?
I think that person who thinks that way is being naive, because every movie has an agenda inside of it. Every movie has
a message.
You
got to
understand,
agenda,
when you write something, if you sit down and you're writing a story, you have the power to put any ideology that you see. If I'm an atheist, I can make God into the most angriest idea that I would as I wanted to my characters, right? Like when you're writing a story, in essence, right, you're God and you are creating your characters to play out a version of life that we also live out, you know? So everything has every brand, every business, everything has an ideology attached to it. And Nike would just do it. That's an ideology. You get what I mean? Like, they don't even show you the shoes in the commercial. All they show you is some character or some celebrity athlete, you know, doing some kind of amazing thing with some great narration behind it. And it's like, just do it. You get what I'm saying? It's all like a marketing ploy. So I would say that being woke in your films, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, whatever it is that you feel internally that's in your heart to project into the world, project it.
Now, there's something in your movies, especially Brenda, that I saw in Choices. Again, guys, look it up on YouTube, Choices. Okay? It's a beautiful, beautiful series. There, you use over-the-head shots. You use shoulder-level shots, but using in a quick motion. You also have a lot of wide-angled pans, right? Or shots, right? Very reminiscent of Spike Lee. Again, these are people that I don't think you realize that your style is like mimicking to, but a lot of people like that style because it's very raw and authentic, which I love. And it creates suspense. It creates this excitement, like, oh, what's going to happen next?
Right, right, right.
This isn't a movie they were watching. Now it's a real telling of a story that's happening in real time. I think that's the reason why reality shows became such a big hit. It's because of that same ideology, right? But on the flip side, what I've seen online is that they also criticize that, saying that it can make it very sloppy, right? And instead of creating a sense of like a fast-paced excitement, confusion. What do you say to people who criticize your style of filmmaking versus famous film directors who have made this an entire career?
I would say, like, for me, when I first started making films, one, I haven't made my best film yet, right?
Then I love your films, by the way.
No.
I love
you.
It. I really do.
For me, I don't take it bad if someone does or doesn't. For me, it's all I care about is the progress. Every film, I'm better than the last film I did. And that's all I'm paying attention to. So as I was doing my beginning films, I didn't really try to copy Spike Lee or anybody. I grew up watching a bunch of movies, and I'm like, oh, that's how they caught that angle. You know what I mean? It's no sophistication to it.
But subconsciously, it literally infiltrated you, which is great.
My goal is, as I continue to create movies, is to continue to learn different ways to convey the message, different ways to capture the angle, different ways to get someone's attention and their emotion drawn towards a certain scene. And as I continue to grow into that, the angles will change because I haven't found, in my opinion, my style yet. And so as I'm creating these films independently, you're actually on a journey with me, seeing me create my style.
Are you ready for segment 4?
Let's go.
Are you sure?
Let's go.
Get your water. Let's go. Get your water.
Why you keep making you...
Get water. You don't want water?
I don't want no water.
I'm dehydrated. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, and we hope that you do, we hope, right? Support us by subscribing to your favorite podcast platform and giving us a rating. Then head to our online store at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop, where you can purchase Cinema Pathway gear, including t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Also, don't forget, follow us on Instagram at cinema_pathway_podcast. Again, that's cinema_pathway_podcast for all the behind the scenes photos and more. Welcome back, my film family, or for my Hispanic people, familia, también. Thank you for being a part of this podcast. I learned so much. But I have to ask you, what is in the future for Mr. Terrell Deeds Fussell?
So I just finished my movie, Revolution.
Like just done?
Yeah, like literally Sunday, we're filming the very last scene of the movie.
Oh, okay.
And then we're getting it ready for post-production.
When's it coming out? What do you think?
I ain't put a date on it, but yeah. I will say within the next 2 to 3 months, we're going to be trying to do our first premiere party to start showing the movie. We're going to tour this movie to at least 5 or 6 different states.
What is it about?
In a nutshell, it's during the 2008 Baltimore riots, and it's about the main antagonist. He watched his dad die when he was a kid, and so he always grew up with this hate for officers. And now that the Baltimore riots is going on, he convinces his friends that they should kill an officer who killed the young black boy the year before in Miami.
Wow. So this is very...
It's very touchy. But I take you through the officer's life and show that he's not racist and he's a good guy, just wants to go to work, come home. And he made a mistake. It wasn't on purpose that he killed the young black boy. It was an honest mistake. And so...
What a nice message.
Yeah,
so
the goal is to create a conversation. That's the goal, to create a conversation. Because when all the riots and all that stuff was happening over the last couple of years, I had wrote this movie before any of that stuff. And I thought it was perfect to put it out now because most people have blinders on when they have opinions. So they can only see things their way. You know, people are like, you know, they hate police, right?
Yeah, some. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
But it's like, if we had no police, you would hate life a lot more. You know what I mean?
That is so true.
And then another thing is, there are really officers who are not bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, that's a career.
Can I ask you a question? Do you feel the heat?
Yes.
And the reason why I'm asking is because this is our moment, our segment called The Hot Spot, where we ask you some controversial issues in the film world. You like that segment, right?
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah, put me on the spot.
Let's there you go. It. What, you get some water? Get some water?
I got some water.
Let me get some water. Are you ready for this? I have no water for me. Okay. 100 degree question.
Okay.
It's called A Little Integrity a Day Keeps the Gatekeeper Away. Famous comedian and film star Cat Williams and Dave Chappelle famously stated that they would not put on a dress to reach the next level in their careers, as allegedly done by other famous comedians in that time that experienced a boost in their comedic film careers after they portrayed women. Martin Lawrence, Janene, Kevin Hart, recently Cedric the Entertainer, and the list goes on and on. Do you believe that this gatekeeping myth is true, especially for those individuals?
It's funny that you said that. I do believe that there has to be someone at the table when a movie is being made or being talked about and discussed that's like, yeah, I think this character should wear a dress or include this type of sexual scene in there or include this type of sexual orientation of a character in there, because you see that happen in movies where it's unnecessary. Gotcha. Right. And I'm sure people on the opposite spectrum of, you know, where I am would probably feel, you know, a certain type of way. So for me, yeah, I do believe there is someone telling actors to put on a dress
to get to the next level
to
of their
get
career.
To the next level. But
okay,
I think standing firm on what you believe in as a person, because it doesn't mean that person who wore the dress is homosexual or it.
No. We're not implying none of that.
I'm just speaking. I'm addressing people who probably have these thoughts, right? I don't think it's a problem with them wearing the dress, as in if they don't believe it's a problem. If they're cool with it, then so be it. Okay. You know, but I think everybody has to be willing to stand on what they believe and what they feel is wrong or right morally. And for someone who's willing to put on a dress to get ahead in life, then I can't be mad at them, because some people don't know what it's like to be extremely poor, you know, and somebody is finally offering you a glass of water and it's like, man, all I gotta do is put on a dress. Would I do it? No. But I understand people who do.
This is your 200 degree question called Lust in the Flesh that echoes to one of your movies, Lust in the Flesh.
Okay.
See the bridge? You see that? I do my homework. Anyway, Bill Cosby, Harvey Weinstein, and countless of other famous film stars have lost their careers and essentially most of their right standing in the eyes of the people because of giving into their flesh in their private lives. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
They've been exposed for doing those things. Yet so many of the Hollywood movies make direct and indirect claims that portraying certain sexual activities as a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm going is this, is that do you believe that Hollywood and films that kind of portray these sexual things have created the monster that isn't, that was inside of them?
Are you saying the film itself or Hollywood as the aspect of
both?
The industry itself.
Yes, because I believe, I'm not saying that they promote those disgusting things they did, but by promoting certain things, you may make things that are already inside us worse, is what I mean. Like the monster within.
I can agree with that, because
some people believe so, some believe not. But what do you think?
Just from my study of marketing and how psychological marketing is, you can create a desire into people that wasn't originally there. And a lot of people don't believe that that's possible, but how many times have you watched a McDonald's commercial and they out of nowhere want some McDonald's? How many times have you passed the McDonald's symbol and stopped and said, you know what, let me grab some McDonald's? It's because, you know, you can't implant desires. And then, like, I also believe in birds of a feather flock together. So if you hang with a certain type of people and they are inclined to do certain things, it don't mean everyone does this, but you will be inclined to do the same things they do because they make it seem okay. So I think it can create monsters, and I think it can intensify monsters, you know. And another thing is, when you're rich, and when you're rich, there's nothing withholding from you. Imagine being in a situation.
The world is handed to you on a silver platter.
Right. There's nothing that you can't do now, right? There's nothing that you can't have. There's no person that you can't have. So it really shows what type of person you are when you have that type of success and you're able to say no to certain things, you know?
So let's talk about Deeds Productions, okay? You are the CEO of your own film production company. I mean, literally from the streets and the family and your neighborhood full of gang fights, prison sentences. Now you are the man of your own destiny.
Yes, sir.
First of all, my hat goes off to you. That's beautiful. Number two, how does your production company differentiate from all the other ones that have been made throughout the century?
I think for me, I learned my purpose in life fairly young. I think I was about maybe 19, 20 years old. And I knew I wanted to create, right? But it, for me, creating is, it has a deeper purpose. Like, so I believe in God. And the fact that I believe in God, I believe that God put us here to be at service to each other and at benefit to each other. And so essentially, with these productions, I just want to create things that will make an impact on the urban community. That's where it's centered for me. So, the money, any of that stuff is secondary, but the impact is what's important for me. If I can get that one kid who's watching what I'm doing to be inspired and want to change his life and do something better, and whatever that better might be for him, then I feel like I've done my job. If I can get, you know, one person to say, hey, man, it is a God, and change their life morally, like, better, then I think that's my job. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. So that's what I say what makes me different. And this is no knock on no other film production company.
No, speak it.
I'm not doing this primarily just for money. The first thing I said when my cousin started my company for me was, man, I'll do everything for free. And he was like, whoa, 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 let me teach you how to run a business. You know what I mean? So I didn't come into this with the intentions of making money. I just wanted to create things that would make some kind of impact on people.
So no matter what criticisms that you have faced and the people may say, just know that your films are definitely birthed from the heart and from almost this childlike love. How do you feel about film communities working together and building something together? Because people think there's healthy competition and then there's malicious competition. How would you negate that in this industry?
I don't believe in competition. I truly don't believe in competition. I don't believe in oversaturation. And the reason why is because you always bring something unique to the table. People buy from you. People watch your movies. People watch your content because of the uniqueness you bring to it, which is all the nuances that make you you. It's not about trying to do things because of what your competition might be doing. Because at the end of the day, your competition don't have the blueprint for you to be you. You get what I'm saying? If you made $1 million off something, right? Because everyone loves you or whatever, and your competition copies that exactly, even if whatever he makes, at the end of the day, you're better at being you than he is.
I got to ask you this.
Go ahead.
And I ask this to every guest because it is incredibly important with your child sitting right there. You guys don't see him, but he's cute looking. Yeah,
he's over there.
If you had to speak to him, how do you wish to be remembered?
I wish for him to remember that no matter what, I was 100% down and a part of his life, and that no matter what he becomes in life, I am a full supporter, and all I wanted was just for him to be better than me. If he can do that, I'm happy. If you can just get a couple notches further than I did, if you can just be a couple notches wiser than I was, if you can make a couple more better decisions than I did, then you have made me proud. You know what I mean? And that's what I want all my kids to do.
Where can we find you, sir?
You can find me anywhere with these productions. DEEDZ Productions with a Z at the end instead of an S. You type that in on any social media platform, I will pop right up. The one thing I do want to leave here and say is that if you're a filmmaker and your goal is to make a life and some kind of living from filmmaking, I will say that you will have to ignore every bit of criticism that you will get along this journey. And the most important thing for you to do is not just learn your craft, definitely master your craft, but there are so many other skill sets that you add to your craft that will take what you do to the next level. So spend your time studying and study well, and bring team members a part of what you're doing that have different skill sets that you might don't have. And I guarantee you, over time, it won't be overnight, but over time, you will grow into the person that you see yourself becoming.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is the right perspective. And that's the reason why he's here today. Thank you so much for being a part of this podcast.
Thank you for having me, man.
Brother, I love you, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Love you, brother.
I really appreciate it being here. Really, thank you guys.
Can I be your next movie?
I knew it was good. I got it. I got a role for you.
Hey, man.
I got a role
for you. You
got
it on tape, right?
Star,
you got it on tape. There's a role for me.
I got a star role for this
Oscar
guy.
Oscar winning what role, right?
Yes.
That's what you saying?
Yes. Oscar role.
We love you guys. Bring up that perspective. Even if it's a crazy one like me, hey, we love you, family. And of course, before we go to Mr. D's Productions online. Bye-bye the crazy host.
Oh, my goodness.
You got it?
To our listeners, thank you again for joining us in the Cinema Pathway podcast today.
I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. Our producer and director is the lovely Juliette Asson, and our associate producer is Victor Hugo Pereira. The executive producer and editor is Freddie R. Rodriguez. This was a presentation by Paradoxical Films. And please visit our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com for more information about today's podcast. And you can also email us if you like at cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com, where you can send all comments, suggestions for all future episodes. Lights out!